the Bookshelf Radio and video. For those of you who are watching the video, this is Deborah Herman, your host, and with me is one of my favorite co-hosts, Diane O'Connell, who is the Right to Sell Your Book maven. Correct?
That's correct.
That's correct. This is, you have with you right now, for those of you interested in publishing, an actual acquisitions editor who has not only worked inside publishing, but who has worked as an independent editor and has helped many people bring their books from idea into fruition and into the page and into the hands of literary agents and ultimately onto the shelves. We thought we would bring our forces together because I've been working in all kinds of areas. I am, as many of you know, a literary agent for about 20, well, I'm not going to say, years. And now I'm doing some editing and I work on book proposals. And also I've been learning all about digital marketing and social media marketing to help those of you who want to become, to even out the playing field for when you do have your books and when you want to bring them either to your reader directly, as in self-publishing, or if you want to try to land a traditional publishing contract. So we thought we would bring our forces together and talk to you about how to work with literary agents and also how to work with editors. And certainly this is live call-in, only I am blanking on the phone number right now. But we started a little bit late tonight, so we're going to kind of talk at you and anticipate some of the many questions that we've heard over the years. I think we have combined more than we're going to mention.
That's right.
Right? We're not going to talk about it. But first, I'd like to ask you to tell our listeners and viewers what is it like sitting in your chair as an editor, as far as looking at submissions, let's say you're still working. First, we're going to talk to you about when you're working in a publishing house. What's it like for you when you receive submissions? What stands out to you and what will make you look twice and actually consider something?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Believe it or not, I can usually tell from the first page whether this is something I want to continue reading on to the second page and more. And usually what stands out for me is the language, first of all. Is it sharp? Is it evocative? Does it pull me right in? Is it clear and declarative, or is it kind of all over the place? I also look for originality of idea. And again, usually I can tell if this is going to be an original story from the first page. I looked for conflict within the pages. I look for
not within the writer.
No. Within the story. Okay. You know, I look for a voice from the writer, something very distinctive. I look for great characters. So all of that.
Sometimes you're only going to get a query letter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for those of you who are a little bit newer to publishing, a query letter is the first step in the protocol to contacting an agent or an editor. You don't typically want to send a lot of material to them because they're receiving a lot of material. A lot of it now is done digitally, and many, if you go to websites and you see what submission guidelines are, you'll find that many agents and editors want digital submissions. But if you think about it, you don't want to hit them with a lot all at once. So the protocol is to write a query letter. And that's your introduction where you're asking to be invited to the next step, which is to submit more material. So if you're looking at tons of query letters all day, and I know with fiction, and that's what you were acquiring, you'll often get some either a synopsis or you'll get some pages. But first, just looking at that letter, mm-hmm. Can you sometimes tell whether or not you're going to want to continue?
Absolutely.
So that letter is important.
That letter is very important, and there are a lot of mistakes that writers make that maybe their story and their manuscript would be worth looking for, but they may end up sabotaging themselves with a poor query letter. So some of the things that I look for in a good query letter is, first of all, to just be straightforward. You know, tell me what the story's about, the name of the story, if it falls into a particular genre, how long it is in terms of words. And then I want to see a couple of paragraphs about what the story is about. And if you're not able to tell me, for me, that it's not going to get any better in 300 pages than it is in two paragraphs.
Nonfiction, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. When I first started in the business, and you know, back then everything was done with the little business envelopes, and a lot of people still utilize that. They send, you know, which is great, and they send a very nice typed query letter and mail it. Having literally on my lap, stack like this, use my letter opener. Mm-hmm. Some people even know what those are anymore, but I'd use my letter opener and I would, you know, read the letter, and I would probably give each one less than a minute. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that a lot of people, it's almost like they wanted to impress me with their use of language, but by the third paragraph, I didn't have a clue what the book was about. And I don't think a lot of writers connect that what this is at this point is no longer art. This is business transaction. You are asking someone to look at your work, mm-hmm. and possibly enter into a contract with you.
Exactly. And you got it there. It's true. And you need to, in essence, you're doing a sell job. You've got to sell me that this is something that I want to spend my time on reading more of. So, you know, again, those, that paragraph or two where you're talking about, look, I'm looking for a theme. I'm looking for who are your main characters? What is the character journey? What is the plot? What is the big idea of your novel? I don't get a sense of a big idea. I may not read any further. You know, the other thing that a big mistake authors make in query letters is often they'll give a little bit about themselves toward the end. Which is good if what you have to say relates to the story and why I would be interested in it. For instance, if your story is about a marine biologist as a main character, if you tell me that you are a marine biologist, I'd be interested in that.
But
don't tell me that, you know, your mother and your brother and your writing group love this story and thought it would make a bestseller. You know, don't tell me what you do in your day job unless it has relevance, or what your degrees are unless it has relevance. So be very clear. And the other thing is, and I know with AIDS as well, you like to know that you were chosen, you know, for this query letter, not that they just sent it out to anyone. So if you know something about the publisher or the agent you're sending it to, let them know why you're sending it. Say, you know, if you're saying, oh, I understand you represent X, Y book, and I love that book, and my book would reach the same readers, or it's the same thing with the publisher you're sending to them. You know, say that I think, you know, this book would fall in line with your XYZ imprint.
So, in other words, it's really good to do your research.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we may have even met because of the writer's guide. Is that one of the ways we connected, or was
it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because as you'll see on Jeff Herman's website, I think back since 1990, we've put out this huge directory that gives you insight. It's like, you have no excuse. We've done the work for you.
If you get no other book, get that book. I tell you, because it's not just that you've done the research with the publishers and the agents and all that. There are great articles in there. Really, really good articles on the business and the craft of writing.
To just shift your perspective that, you know, that you are, no matter what, you are becoming a writer entrepreneur. You're not, the art is wonderful. If you spend your life doing what you love and you're writing book and you follow the advice, and what I'm looking forward to is Diane is going to be guest blogging a great deal in the blog I'm launching called Writer Entrepreneur. Correct. You need to learn in a lot of ways reading that material, but you have to shift your mentality into understanding that there are so many things for you to learn. and that you can learn them because there's so many resources. So if you're looking in, for example, Jeff Burns' site, book publishers, editors, and literary agents, you can see what an editor is looking for.
Right.
You know, and then you can drill down a little bit, maybe go to that publisher website and find out more. You look for, we try to cover books that people have actually produced. So we go to an imprint and our book, and we actually show recent titles. You, now with the internet, can actually go to the website of that publishing house and even go further and look at books in the bookstore or on Amazon, find out who the editors were, because they're always listed in the, we hope, always listed in the acknowledgments. You know, find out who's doing what, because it's targeting. You can target to get your material in front of the right person.
Yeah, otherwise, you know, you're just sending a scattershot, and then you're going and getting all these rejection letters, and there's no need to get that many rejection letters if you've done your homework.
It greatly eliminates the assurance that you get a lot of rejection, because there are, just like anything, a little strategy can mean the difference.
Yes.
And I always feel bad for writers who, you know, they seem a little bit clueless. They're feeling so disempowered about the process of their career. You know, if they have that disconnect and they say, well, I'm writing, but nobody reads it, and blah, blah, whambulance, I'm a victim. You don't have to be a victim. You got people like us, you know, Diane O'Connell and Deborah Herman, you know, we're here to educate you so that you can have more success.
Right. And you know, the other thing I want to say regarding rejections is that there are different levels of rejections.
No, it's all the same. You hate me. Nobody loves me.
There are good rejections and there are bad rejections. And so what you want to is actually get more of the good rejections. And by that I mean, you know, if the agent or the editor has taken the trouble to actually write your name personally and you know, do write a personal letter, that means that they took your work seriously. So that's one thing you should feel good about. If they actually take the next step and give you some specific feedback, for instance, you know, while I felt the writing was very good, I just couldn't connect with your main character, or I felt the middle sagged, or anything that you can hold on to that's a specific piece of advice, that is great news, because that means you can then hire an editor to help work with you to get that. And in fact, I'm working with somebody right now who has gotten a number of these rejection letters.
Good rejection letters.
Yes, good rejection letters. And he said, okay, now is the time for me to work with an editor to get that particular, because he started to see he was getting some of the same comments. So now he knows, oh, that's something that has to be fixed.
Now, I will say that it's sometimes better to get the editor before you do your submission process, because there are times when you're not going to be able to go back to the well. If you hire a professional, if you're really serious about it, and you know, there are many different levels of editing, you can hire someone to do what I like to call, and I like to do, which is a first read, where I'll do an overall high-level evaluation of a book, of whether, because I may not know how to fix it. I may look at it and say, wow, I really, you know, this holds together. It's at the quality of things that I have reviewed before, that I have represented before, and I'll give pointers, and I might help clean up the manuscript, but I would say, okay, that's ready to launch, because there is no further information that's going to get you what you need to know. Why isn't it publishable, or if it is? There are many factors why a book will not be picked up by a publisher. If you can eliminate some of the editorial factors ahead of time, I think that's better.
I absolutely agree. You know, the bar is set so high with traditional publishing now. I mean, it always was high, but it's even harder now.
It is.
And when I was at Random House, it was really very possible for an unknown writer to come in, they called over the transom in the slush pile. And I had a slush pile that, you know, was higher than my desk. And believe it or not, I actually found some authors. It was their first book. and I was able to develop them.
Yeah, because they were rough around the edges.
Right.
But the voice was there, the passion was there, you know, and you
exactly.
could look at it.
But the difference
and
is
see how to fix it.
You don't have that
no.
anymore in the publishers. You don't have that editor there who's saying, you know what, this is good. It's rough around the edges. This guy needs some development. Let me work with him. We'll give him an advance. We'll make him an offer. But now most of the editors that are on staff are mostly acquisitions editors, which means that they are tasked with buying the work. So they are looking for something that is pretty much ready to go. You'll still get editing, but not that kind of real deep down developmental editing. They're looking for something that is almost there, if
Absolutely.
Not already there.
Unless yeah. it's someone who has an amazing platform that's almost recruited by them because they see something that's very newsworthy, or they see that someone has a huge social media presence or, mm-hmm. or internet presence. There are a lot of ways that an editor will weigh something, even if it's still a little rough around the edges, and say, no, I can still bring this to a publisher. Because if you've got an editor who likes to actually develop books, you may have someone champion the book and bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there has to be elements, a lot of good elements, that will cause them to use their slot, because they're only given so many slots, correct?
Right.
To use that slot for that book.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up, Deborah. Because, you know, you may like
right.
a lot of stuff, but you can't buy everything.
No.
You know, you have a budget, so to speak.
Yes.
So a budget. Editors have a budget with money, how much money they
right.
can spend, and then also a limited number of books.
Yes, because of the lists.
Yes.
And also the lists have to have variety. I've pitched books that I thought were great for coming from the literary agent end. And I might hear, you know, we just acquired one like that. I can't have two
right.
on my list.
Yeah.
And so there are so many factors that enter into why a book may not be acquired through the traditional means, which, again, not to digress completely, which is why I'm now moving toward, you know, the self-publishing arena,
mm-hmm.
because it used to be that self-publishing or vanity publishing, which is not the same thing, was the arena of people who maybe had a story that only their family would like to read, or they weren't skilled,
right.
you know.
But, you know, you brought up an interesting thing, self-publishing versus vanity.
Right.
Do you want to explain, because I don't think a lot of people really understand what is the difference there between true self-publishing and vanity publishing?
Well, from what I understand, especially when I was a young writer, you know, you'd go buy writers' magazines or you look. We didn't have the internet. I know I'm dating myself, but some of you didn't either. So what we would always see ads like, get your book published,
mm-hmm.
and we can do this for you. And it's very flattering, and it's a dream. And I remember those early days before I first saw my name in print, you know, right out of journalism school. And when you scratch beneath the surface, you find that what you're doing is you're paying this company to publish your book. You get a certain number of books. They will publish pretty much anybody who will write that check,
mm-hmm.
and they will do nothing to help you sell that book. So what you want, the reason it's vanity press is because it's really for your ego and your
right.
vanity, that you want to have a book and you can say to your family, look, I wrote this book. And you may, you know, some people might have gone somewhere with it, but for the most part, it was really to just have something as a legacy.
Yeah.
And that's where vanity publishing started. There are some companies that existed for a very, very long time and published if you weren't published by a traditional house. Some of them have actually gone out of business.
Yeah.
Because what's happened now is more do-it-yourself publishing, where you can actually make yourself into a publisher, where you do everything soup to nuts. You get prices for printing, you do the layout, you do everything.
Well, I should say you
editing,
hire people.
Or not. Some people actually, or they would farm out those things, but they would do their own editing. They would, you know, just maybe work with a layout person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would still have the problem of how do I sell this? Some people have been very successful. Back in the day, The Celestine Prophecy was a self-published book.
Oh, yeah.
For example. There were
so was Chicken Soup for the Soul. Did you know that?
That's a long story, and actually, no, it wasn't.
Oh.
No, it was a small run with a publishing house that was about to go under.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that was actually traditional. But what they did, and the reason why I wouldn't dismiss that, is that what they did is they ran with it and created guerrilla marketing plans that nobody had ever seen before.
Right.
So, yes, that falls into a different category of book marketing and taking something where someone was essentially really a printer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it was for them. But there's also author services companies, and there's a kind of a hybrid do-it-yourself publishing where, you know, for example, with the company that I'm now launching off the bookshelf, what we're doing is creating a writer's community for independent writers.
Mm-hmm.
But we are educating them and suggesting that they provide the pieces that they would have gotten in a traditional publishing house. For example, hire someone like you. I know you also recommend other editors. We have editors mm-hmm. we recommend. Do not expect that just because you think it's a good book that you're going to take our free conversion software. Okay, so it is easy for you to take a piece of, you know what I'm thinking, all right? Something that's not good. Fill in the blanks. Something not good. That would not stand up against traditional books that have been edited professionally. So it's not a good idea, even though it's easy, and we make it free and easy for you because you can take a Word document and essentially upload it into your own author web page on our site. But what we're recommending is that you take those steps and you're not going to have to spend the thousands of dollars it used to take to actually print your books, because you can sell it as an ebook, you can sell it as a print on demand, which means you don't, that people are basically paying for your book and you don't have to lay out to print that book. Now, if you want to go ahead and get your books printed, you can at a very, very competitive cost. But we want to teach the writers through our blogs and we have professionals they can work with to fill in those bare spots. Now, for example, if you're working with someone who wants to self-publish and you know that they have a certain amount of money that they're going to allocate to certain roles,
mm-hmm.
where do you think they should be spending their money?
Editing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it starts with the book.
Yeah.
It starts with the word. And, you know, readers are savvy. They know. They know when something's well edited and they know when it's not. And what's the point of publishing something if it's not going to be a good read?
You want it to reflect your best self. You need to get your ego out of the way. I only like to work with editors who are, kind. I don't mean kind in being non-constructive, but I like editors that are kind in the sense of not making a blanket statement that this is just terrible and you should never consider writing.
Oh my God.
I mean,
I can't imagine an editor doing that.
There are people who, if they're frustrated themselves, I think you see it more in actual academic environments.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, where they kill the spirit of the person who's writing the book. And that's not what I like. So when I choose editors, again, such as Diane, to be referrals from our website, would be editors who have in their part, I want to help this writer reach their dream by learning their craft, by me teaching them, mentoring them, or fixing it,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because we as editors, it's not our story. We bring it. It's like bringing it to life.
Right. Well, you bring up an interesting point there, because there are some editors who want to impose their vision of your story.
Right.
This is the way you should write it. You know, this is the story you should tell. When I work with authors, what I look for is, what is the story you want to tell, and how is the best way to get there? So you see, there's a difference there, is that maybe the story you want to tell is this, maybe you're not telling it in the most effective way possible. So my job is to help you get there.
Now, on the other hand, by also working with a marketing person, which we're trying to integrate all of these pieces. If you're also working with a marketing person who then can talk to your editor, who has a sense of how to position you, because people don't realize that when you are an author, you brand yourself. You now become a brand. You are a persona. You are not just the person who says, oh, I like to write, but I really don't like to promote. Excuse you. You put your name on a book, somebody's reading it, somebody's going to eventually want to know who you are, because they might like it. You know, people don't connect to that. They might love your writing. They may really want you to come out from behind the words, go do a book signing, you know, things like that. Those things happen. So what I try to do, you know, you were saying, I want to know your vision for the book. Maybe not so much with fiction, but you know, coming from the agent perspective, I also like to think, what about your book is someone going to want to read? And I know you do edit that way.
Oh, yes. I always tell them, and it's interesting, I had one of my authors where, you know, I work with him very intensely in person. And by the end of the 2 days that we had working together, he sat back and he says, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Everything we're doing is for the reader.
Right.
Right. It's for the reader.
Right.
Now, obviously, you write for yourself, or you write from yourself and what inspires you, what gives you voice. But it's not enough to write for yourself. You have to write for the reader, because you have to give them a good experience.
Well,
you have
it's
to
a relationship.
Give them good answer. It is. It is absolutely a relationship.
You're not going to get married to yourself. Think of it as a marriage, where you are marrying your reader for that time that they are spending engaged with your words. They're experiencing this energy that you've created by spinning this yarn, if it's a novel. So
it's a partnership.
Yeah,
it's
is.
Actually a creative
it
partnership.
Is.
Because
it is.
Think of it this way. The only thing the reader has are your words on a white page.
Right.
Right? Black words on a white page. That's all they have. Yet, in a really good book, they're actually visualizing. They're filming a movie in their mind.
Yes.
So you, as the author, have to use your words to create that movie. Now, everybody's movie is going to be different, which
right.
is why often, you know, when you have screen adaptations,
right.
don't always work, because everybody's got a different vision in their mind. But still, you have to evoke that in the writer.
Oh,
reader.
Yes, in the reader. But what I really love is when a writer is writing from their passion, they're envisioning maybe, you know, you don't want to always focus just, you know, you want to tell your story, but it's really funny sometimes when you have commentary from a reader saying, oh, and did you mean that? And oh, and how that was a great analogy, or that was a great, you know, archetype. And the writer says, huh? No, I didn't mean to do that. I totally didn't plan that. But I think with the two of us, Diane and Deborah, you know, we both are kind of both sides of the fence, because we've written and we read. We both love to read. We love film. Even though I'm more in the nonfiction, I love memoir. I love novels. And I actually studied, as we've spoken about, literary journalism. So, you know, I love that. But, you know, the experience is, it's like a universal consciousness type of thing. Writers, when they are really in the zone, I think they're connecting to something higher than themselves.
Right.
And they've got to allow themselves to get to that zone.
Yeah, and the only way you can do that is to really set aside quiet space, take yourself away, and do it consistently every single day if you can. Even a little bit each day is better than doing like a binge writing marathon in a weekend or something like that. You build when you live with that, when you're writing every day and thinking about it. You're actually writing when you're not at the computer or a notepad.
Right.
You know, your brain
right.
is working
right.
on it. Yeah.
So it becomes alive for you. But one of the things we're trying to do, you know, why we're doing these things together, aside from the fact that we really like each other and enjoy
yes,
having these, who else can we talk to about these subjects, you know? I mean, the listeners who are actually listening because they're writers and want to know about publishing and getting published, and each other.
Right.
You know, I was just remarking to myself when we had lunch the last time how totally cool it was that we could talk about this novel that you're editing. And we had this discussion because I saw it differently.
You know, I want to tell you about that.
Yes.
You gave me some really good advice on that. And it is interesting because there was a certain problem that I was mulling over my brain with this, that this author was having with this novel. I wasn't sure how to address it. And you came up with an idea, having never read anything just from what I was telling you about
right,
it.
Right.
And when I went to work with the author, I presented that, and she, and as it turned out, she said, "Oh yes, I was there at such and such a time. It was some way that you wanted me to frame this story," and she just ran with it. It was the absolute right thing.
And it's so by which brings me to another point. That's why we created Writers, Agents, and Editors Network, because when you connect with like-minded people. We've created this friendship together now for a while, and it is so wonderful because it's collaborative. We see things a little differently, and we help each other. We share ideas, and the whole idea behind WayNet is for writers to help each other, to commune with each other. There's no competition because you are all in it together, and why one person does well and another person doesn't, it could have a bazillion reasons. And if you compare notes and you share with each other, you learn how to deal with anything that comes up.
Yeah, and it's great. It is like having that writer's workshop.
Yes.
But it's virtual, and not everybody has access to a writer's workshop in their hometown or whatever.
I mean, I know we're in the future, and this is just something to tuck away for those of you who will be continuing to follow Off the Bookshelf Radio, is that we're hoping to do some live events. I'm actually eyeing my town, which is Stockbridge, Massachusetts, for a writer's event with my dear friend and colleague, Diane. Probably, take about a year to plan, but we really want to bring people who want to meet beyond the virtual to a site that's a site-specific event that will allow them to connect with other like-minded people. And
Stockbridge is
a great
place for that. This area of the Berkshires has such a strong literary history.
It certainly does. And we may take our attendees to the place where Melville wrote Moby Dick, or to Edith Wharton's home,
right?
Or where Thoreau, isn't that somewhere around here?
So
where
W.E.B. Du Bois?
Yes, in Great Barrington, Du Bois. Du Bois.
I know. I always say Du Bois. I think of Blanche Du Bois.
I know Blanche Du Bois. No, I took a class in the Harlem Renaissance, and boy, were we corrected.
I still know how to pronounce it the French way.
I know.
But there are a lot of literary.
Wouldn't that be
people
fun?
Around here. Yes.
We should plan this. Okay, you've heard it first on Off the Bookshelf Radio. We are going to plan this event because you as writers, you need to connect with people, you need to read, you need to find the joy in it. A lot of it is very tedious, it's hard work, but you have to have fun with it too. It has to be your passion. You know, you're not going to always get the instant gratification rewards from it.
No, and you have to work through those times. If it is your passion, and you'll get those dark days, you'll get those terrible days where nothing comes. But if you, like I said before, if you're writing consistently, you know that, okay, well, today was pretty crappy. I didn't get anything done, but I know maybe tomorrow I will, you know. So
I'm going to teach you a song, okay? I don't know who's listening, and I may totally regret this. And I'm actually going to do a music video, okay? But see if you relate to this. Wake up every morning to my laptop and my Joe. That's coffee. Nothing on my Word doc, so I think I'm gonna go. I got the blues. I got the going nowhere blues. I got the writer's block going nowhere blues.
I love it.
Wait, there's another verse.
Okay.
You really want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay. Tried to get an agent. They said they'd take a look. And then they sent an email, said, I need a better book. I got the blues. I got the going nowhere writer's block blues. Good. You're going to be singing that with me.
Okay. You'll teach it to me. We'll get some
We're going to get some guitar going.
Good.
What do you think?
I love it.
Do any
I'm
of
all
you?
For different music videos.
I know. We're going to
resurrect
video.
My music career somehow.
I know.
Right?
Well, you can actually sing. I'll be the lyricist. And then we'll get, it's such a universal feeling. Everybody, you know, you get the, it's like going nowhere. Got the writer's block blues, but you gotta push through it. You gotta be silly.
You do. Don't give me, you know, and try, actually, I have a blog on my.
Are you gonna sing a song now, or is it only me?
No, it's only you. But yeah, I had a blog on my website, 41 Wacky Ways to Beat Writer's Block or something.
We are going to do a blog. I'm going to upload this to the blog, and you are going to share that.
Okay.
We promise you we're going to give you 47 ways to beat the Writer's Block Blues. And then you are going to see the music video very soon. So we are getting close to the end of the hour. This went very fast only because we had tremendous technical difficulties, probably due to me, not sure. So I just want to make sure you know where you can reach the two of us. You can reach Diane O'Connell at
writetosellyourbook.com, and that's W-R-I-T-E, writetosellyourbook.com, or you can just send me an email directly at diane@writetosellyourbook.com.
That is so simple.
It is. Yeah.
And you can always reach me, Deborah Herman, at deborah@waynet.com. You can go to Waynet, waenet.com, and join if you haven't already, because it's a great place for you to meet other writers and join groups and anything you want. Watch for the launching of offthebookshelf.com in the next week. We're going to be launching it, and we're going to always want your input for that. And even if you're not ready to upload a book, which I hope you're not, if it's not edited, you can join the community and you can learn how to do it and how to best launch your books and your writing career. So keep in touch, keep writing, and stop singing the blues. Catch us again next week at bbsradio.com/offthebookshelf. Good night, everyone.
Night. Thanks for having me, Deb.
Oh, you're welcome. I love having you here.